Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. And joining us now is Daniel Webster, Professor of Health Policy and Management at the Johns Hopkins Bloomberg School of Public Health, where he serves as Director of the Center for Gun Policy and Research, Deputy Director of Research for the Center for the Prevention of Youth Violence, and Director of the PhD Program in Health and Public Policy. He's the lead author of a new study in the Journal of Urban Health that provides evidence of how the repeal of Missouri's background check law has led to an increase in the state's gun violence and murder rates. Welcome to Background Briefing, Daniel Webster.
Thanks for having me.
And you have provided evidence here of a direct connection between repealing what was called the permit to purchase, a law that verified a background check or that required a background check, and that since that repeal, which was urged by the local chapter of the National Rifle Association, there's been a 16% increase in the state's murder rate. Now, what's your sense then of the next step? Because it would seem to me that sometimes in our society, facts, evidence, rationality, and reason don't necessarily lead to results.
Well, if what you're saying, am I expecting Missouri lawmakers to go back and put the law back into place, I have to say I'm not expecting that to happen anytime soon. However, I do think that this is a very important piece of research that does demonstrate the benefit of reasonable measures to keep guns out of the wrong hands and to put more accountability into our gun laws, and that it leads to very meaningful differences in our murder rates. So I think that these findings will be very relevant to policymakers across the United States, whether those are at state level or hopefully at the federal level as well.
Well, apparently, even within the National Rifle Association, there's perhaps even a majority of its members who are like, I think, most Americans. If you polled them and asked them, are you in favor of criminals having easy access to guns, or mentally unstable people having easy access to guns? And they will say no. And that seems to be, but yet the leadership of the NRA has taken that organization in an extreme direction. So is there any way that you can reach out to the rank and file and circumvent the leadership?
Well, that's an excellent question. I think all of the surveys indicate basically what you just said, which is gun owners generally, and even NRA members, support very common sense measures like requiring background checks for all gun sales, which is not in step with the NRA's leadership and position on these matters. And I personally think that when more gun owners, in essence, voice their opinions on these subject matters is when we will see change. Right now, we're letting a very small portion of the American public and even a small portion of gun owners dictate important public policy that affects safety for us all.
And in terms of the divide between urban and rural in this country, my understanding is a lot of handguns that end up in murders in cities are purchased in rural areas, and sometimes from the same gun store. There's apparently a notorious gun store in the suburbs of Chicago that supplied most of the guns for the incredibly out-of-control homicide rate in the inner city of Chicago. Is there any way to address that dynamic?
Yes, I think there is. First of all, I want to acknowledge that, yes, the dynamic of what you just described, that quite often the cities with the greatest rates of gun violence, the guns are not initially sold there. They're typically sold in nearby suburbs or in not very far off rural areas. Our own research has found that state and local licensing and oversight of gun dealers with regular inspections and even potentially undercover stings to make sure that people are doing what they're supposed to be doing in terms of how they're conducting background checks and keeping track of their guns so their employees don't walk away with them and sell them on the street and that kind of thing. We found in a number of studies that this has been very effective in reducing the diversion of guns to criminals. So this is a solvable problem, and most licensed gun dealers are law-abiding, good business people who we don't have to worry a great deal about, but it's the relatively small number who have the ability to literally put out hundreds of guns onto the streets into the hands of criminals if they're not adequately regulated and you know, enforcement is monitoring what they're doing. So these are strategies that can lead to fewer incidents of gun violence and really have no impact on law-abiding gun owners' ability to purchase a gun. We're simply trying to put more accountability into the system, and that's generally the theme here, whether you're talking about permit to purchase, handgun licensing, and background checks for all gun sales, or if you're talking about regulation and oversight of gun dealers. It all comes down to having the right laws that hold people accountable and enforcing them. And it doesn't have to be a big cultural debate across urban-rural divides about whether you like guns or you don't like guns, but let's just put in means of accountability that will make us all safer.
So in terms of this struggle between gun control and gun rights, as it's called, where clearly the people on the side of the gun rights issue much better organized and quite passionate, almost to a religious degree, whereas those on the gun control side simply don't have that same kind of dedication. And I mean, recently, for example, after the Sandy Hook shooting in Connecticut, obviously there was an upsurge in concern for gun control. The president himself in the Democratic Party, who more or less had a hands-off policy when it came to guns, stepped into the arena and failed to even get any laws passed in the wake of the Sandy Hook shooting. But in terms of lobbying the state legislature in Connecticut, all of the big gun manufacturers in that state, where many of the leading gun manufacturers are, they let all of their workers off and had them go to the Capitol to lobby. So, you know, you don't have a level playing field. That's what my point is, I guess.
Well, you're absolutely correct. There's a lot more money on the side of protecting the status quo and keeping our gun laws relatively weak. On the other hand, I do think that Sandy Hook was a seminal moment, that there's far more energy and mobilization to strengthen our gun laws, to put more accountability into the system. And we shouldn't expect that's going to change overnight, the whole political dynamic. So my own view is that over the long term, that the current dynamic that makes it very difficult to enact fairly modest measures like mandatory background checks, that we will get there. But in all likelihood, we will only get there if more gun owners, you know, voice their opinions, not the most radical group of on this subject.
But in terms of pushing the envelope in the other direction, in the so-called gun freedom or right to carry direction or conceal carry direction and the stand your ground direction, we have another Trayvon Martin type case now down in Florida where a man objected to loud music coming from a car at a gas station and went over and just pumped a bunch of bullets into this car full of black teenagers, killing one. He's now going to be convicted on lesser charges, but is there any chance that, I mean, it seems like you're fighting on so many fronts here. I don't know whether you should try and deal with more sensible states that where you can make incremental change or take on these states where the extreme libertarian attitudes exist. What's your sense of overall strategy?
I think that some there are a lot of different kind of gun policies, and they're not all created equal. So things like right to carry laws and stand your ground laws are laws that, well, particularly right to carry laws, I think are particularly difficult to politically to address. There's not a consensus at all about that topic matter. I think, on the other hand, laws that are designed, in essence, to keep guns out of the hands of dangerous people, whether they're we're talking about criminals, whether we're talking about underage youth, or people who, as a result of severe mental illness and other factors, might be have very dangerous behaviors, that there's pretty much across the board agreement that we should have measures to keep guns out of their hands. And most of those measures have relatively little impact on law-abiding gun owners, and that's why I have more confidence that we can make ground on those. And I actually also believe that it's those laws that are far more important in the broader scheme of public safety. The research that's been done, for example, on right-to-carry laws generally is found little or no impact of those laws, despite all the debates on either side. On one side, the claims are that, oh, as long as we make it easy for law-abiding citizens to carry guns, violent crime will plummet and we'll all be safer. On the other side, people were saying, oh, if we allow this, we'll have huge spikes in violent crime. Well, the data suggests that neither of those things have occurred. There might be a very modest increase in aggravated assault as a result of these laws. So we're spending a lot of time, passion on issues that are the most difficult to address politically and have the least impact on public safety, whereas I think we should be focusing our energies on areas of agreement of keeping guns out of the wrong hands that research suggests will have the biggest impact on public safety.
Well, just in closing, given that there was actually gun control in the Wild West, and you wouldn't know that from Hollywood movies that have created this kind of myth of everybody having to pack six guns, etc. Mm-hmm. And every movie poster has somebody pointing a gun at you, and every television promo has these wispy young blonde women holding these big guns, you know. So what can be done here in Hollywood, I think, to stop this notion that the handgun solves all problems?
Well, to be honest with you, I sort of gave up on that line many years ago. I think it's difficult. You can't really control what happens in Hollywood. Hollywood will do whatever Hollywood thinks will sell the most. So I think on the prevention side, however, we can and should do everything we can to, in essence, deprogram people, and particularly youth, about, you know, what's reality and what truly is the movies. Because I do think people create, sort of fantasies about how it's so easy as long as you have your gun at the ready to ward off any potential danger or threat, that you'll be able to do that successfully, because you see it time and time and time again in the movies. And if you talk to people who do have any kind of experience in that in real life, say like law enforcement, they'll tell you that's very detached from reality.
Well, Daniel Webster, I thank you very much for joining us. I appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
Again, I've been speaking with Daniel Webster, who's a professor of health policy and management at the Johns Hopkins Bloomberg School of Public Health, where he serves as director of the Center for Gun Policy and Research, deputy director of research at the Center for Prevention of Youth Violence, and director of the PhD program in health and public policy. He is the lead author of a new study in the Journal of Urban Health that provides evidence of how the repeal of Missouri's background check law has led to an increase in the state's gun violence and murder rates. We're going to take a brief station break, and we'll be back talking with the author of a new book, Manufactured Crisis: The Untold Story of the Iran Nuclear Scare.